Hello there, welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Dmytro Lupushansky, CTO of the AI-powered song analysis and discovery tool Harmix. We ask him how these types of tool actually work with their AI technology, what life will be like in the music industry when we have AI assistant tools, and how artists and rights holders should be able to opt their music out of AI training models. All of that in 1 minute. Now, if you're not aware, each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time. So this podcast is also going to be quick. It should take the same amount of time as, hypothetically, Rob Vedke Kroes of the Netherlands could set up and topple 2,400 dominoes. He set up and toppled 80 in 1 minute in 2019. Now, talking of setting up complex systems of individual components, AI-powered platforms like Harmix sift through giant catalogs of music with the intention of helping people, like, for instance, music supervisors, find music that they want to use in video, film, and TV. And so in this Music Ally Extra episode, which is made in partnership with Harmix, Dmytro explains not only how this kind of AI technology works, but also how systems like this will make day-to-day jobs in the music industry easier, and importantly, why taking an ethical approach to training AI models is so vital. Well, I'm very happy to welcome Dmytro Lupushansky of Harmix, or CTO of Harmix, to the podcast. Hello, Dmytro.
Thank you for having me, John.
Great to see you. Now, we're going to be talking about music discovery and search and how AI fits into that, and particularly in relation to catalog. But first of all, let's start with some initial stuff. Who are you personally, and what do you do at Harmix, and why are we talking about this specific issue?
So I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Harmix, where we are creating advanced AI music search for music catalogs. And I'm also doing research in machine learning at the University of Oxford.
Right. So can you tell us about Harmix and its features?
Yeah. So what we are offering is advanced AI music search, and it is tailored for production music, for TV and movie productions, for record labels, and just about anyone who has a music catalog that needs to be discovered. And we offer a few key functionalities, one of which would be prompt search, where the user can describe the music that they are looking for in just plain natural language. So if, say, you're looking for lush and uplifting instrumental featuring a guitar and a piano, then you can just enter it as it is, and we will be able to recommend music for it. You don't need to specify any additional tags or anything like that. You can just put it into words, basically in the same way you would describe it to your colleague. And the prompt search consists of a few key functionalities. So one would be where you're describing the musical component and how it should sound musically. But then you can also describe a story that you want the music to fit for. So if you're looking for a track that would fit well with a scene where a father and a son are sitting on a bench and fishing by the lake, then you can put it like that. And it will be able to come up with recommendations that will fit well with the scene that you have on your hands. And then the third part of prompt search is reference. So if you want a track that sounds similar to some artist or to the soundtracks that are, let's say, in Titanic, then you can also specify that, and we will be able to find similarities and find a similar track.
Right. So at the moment, it's kind of the users, people working in film and TV, who is using it?
We are providing this to music businesses as an API or platform integration. So they can provide their music catalog to us. We would index it and provide the search functionality over that catalog. Mm. And then we are driving revenues for those music businesses because their clients are much more likely to find the music that they're looking for in that catalog. So it's actually replacing the problem that it is solving is it's replacing the previous approach to searching for music, which is based on tags and where you need to specify specifically the genre, the mood, the instruments, and you have a drop down list, which is very limited. And it's not a great experience because it takes a lot of time to get to what you're actually looking for. So in addition to prompt search, we're also offering audio reference and video reference search. So you can upload a track that you have in mind. And a use case that we often get from music supervisors is, I want a track like that, but just cheaper version of it, or I want a track like that, but in this catalog that I have access to and that I can get the rights to. And then it works really well. And people get, and the feedback that we hear from people is really positive.
Yeah, what are they saying? Because I mean, I'm trying to understand here, you know, you're talking about tagging, moving on from tagging this older system, which was perhaps all that was possible, to this more nuanced approach. So what are the people who are using it saying how it affects how they work and the outcomes of the music that's selected?
They say that it helps them save time. And for the video makers that we are talking to that are using the search functionality on the website externally, they're saying that they are much more likely to find what they're looking for using the new search that's enhanced with AI rather than the previous way of searching with just manually selecting the tags. So this is the use case for people looking for music. But then for internal sync departments, for example, those music supervisors are just much more efficient in their job, and they are able to respond to more music briefs and cover more projects. So this is also useful for them.
You mentioned there that, you know, it's sort of as an API aimed at people who have a catalog and they're trying to get more value from it. Obviously, you can see that how that works with time savings. But what about, how do you know what's in your catalog when you have a catalog that gets over a relatively small number, right? It's very difficult to pinpoint exact songs. So what are they saying to you in terms of, I had this perfect song in my catalog and I never knew it was there and I pulled it out. Is that what you hear from them?
Yeah, exactly. So when the catalog gets beyond several thousand tracks, really it's hard to remember all of that and immediately come up with a track that would fit well for the brief that you're getting. And this is where it really helps, because it can pull up songs from your catalog that you maybe, so definitely you've heard it once, at least once, but then it doesn't sit on top of your head and you're not able to come up with that specific track instantly. And especially if the catalog grows to millions of tracks, then it really becomes impossible. And what we also do is, with the help of AI, it really leverages the playing field for all of the tracks. So each track can have equal chances of being selected. It all boils down to how relevant it is to the query and not how popular it is or how well you remember it.
How does the AI element of the search, the sort of being able to type something in natural language, how's that going to change the jobs of the people who do it beyond, for example, just saving time? I mean, it sounds like it's allowing a different level of creative thinking as well.
Yeah, and I think there is also a lot of talk about AI replacing people and replacing their jobs, which is definitely not something that we're after and which we certainly do not believe in. I think that AI will actually enhance the workflow and boost the creativity. So it's not taking the creative part away from the music specialists. It definitely helps in aiding that creativity. So instead of, say, you're looking for a track, instead of going through lots of different recordings, not necessarily relating to what you want to find, you can narrow it down to just a specific subset that would be interesting to you. And also something that I've heard people say is that they come up with the decision of what is the sound that they are looking for when they listen to multiple tracks. So it's not that we can recommend just one track and people would listen to just this one track and say, yeah, this is perfect. People come up with a right approach to finding in music and to music discovery by listening to many pieces of music. And our goal is not to just say, this is what you were looking for, but instead, these are the tracks that are really well suited to what you just entered in the prompt. Have a listen to it and make up your mind. And if you don't like the returned results, you can always specify and tune the prompt and add a bit more of certain instruments that you're looking for or change it up a little bit. So you have the freedom. It's a very creative tool. And we are there just to help the creative process, not to replace it.
One of the things we're starting to understand in a more general sense about AI is that it's changing the entry point. So it raises the bar of entry, if you like, to a certain topic. It allows you to come in at a higher level of whatever it is you're doing. So like you're able to get more quickly to the complicated or the interesting part, which is, you know, with Harmex, you're getting songs that hopefully are better suggestions. What I'm interested in is a little bit more about the comparison between how it used to happen with tagging, right, in terms of the process and the results. I've spoken to a lot of people about tagging of music over the years, and everyone was dissatisfied with it, right? But it was the only option. And you know, there's all the classic examples of, well, you know, we have this giant catalog, and some of these songs were tagged 15 years ago by the intern because we gave it to the person who was doing work experience with us for 3 weeks. And then it's been tagged like that in the catalog ever since. Does Harmex, when it's looking at the music and analyzing it, does it keep in mind historic tags, or does it just start afresh from analysis perspective?
Yeah, I think it's great to understand that is that a lot of similar approaches to finding music using natural language, they are still based on tagging. So the very base approach to this technology is to take the natural language prompt, translate it to tags, and then use the tags to filter the catalog. Mm. This is radically different from what we are doing, where we've been doing research for more than 4 years, and we filed a few patents for this technology that we've built. And we are specifically translating the text into the music dimension. So it's a multimodal machine learning approach where both the text and we are also supporting video search and music, they are all combined into one dimension, and you are able to freely search in between those. So it's a much more fine-tuned approach, and it's yielding much better results as well. And also to comment on the question of what are the results that we are seeing, it's with our clients that we're integrating the AI search with, we're seeing that there's at least a 30% increase in successful search requests, which we are able to measure by comparing the historical trends of how people look for tracks, how they either request license for it, buy or like them, and then how it's changing when people are integrating the advanced search.
Okay. Let's talk then a bit more about your work, your research, and how that relates to this and machine learning and AI. Well, first of all, on a personal level, why, when you're studying something like machine learning and vast amounts of data and how it's processed, you could pick any industry to do this in, right? Why music?
Well, I do believe music is an unexplored area in general in machine learning. People have already achieved great results for images, for text, but not really for music. And it's just starting to become a thing, actually, right now, the multimodal machine learning. And it's great to be part of it. And when I started doing research in this area, I immediately was looking for some gaps and for some specific niche machine learning where I can actually contribute and do something great. And I found that audio is a perfect niche case for it. So we gathered a team, and we've been working for a few years to create this kind of technology and push the boundaries of what was possible before with music selection.
Yeah. So this is a big question, and possibly can't be answered in like a 1 minute answer, but how does it work? Because we talk about AI now as if it's in everything, right? I've seen washing machines advertising AI functionality, right? Which I'm fascinated by the contribution of AI to washing your clothes. But how does the AI work? When you talk about a multi-model system, how does it actually work? How does it process music and assign, let's say, a mood of, like, you know, a father and son sitting on a bench on a sunny summer's day? Like, how do you get from there to there?
For this AI magic to happen, What we really need is a great data that is of great quality. And for all AI companies, it's also a big differentiator. So if you're able to collect a good data set, then if your architectures and approaches to building the AI are also sophisticated enough, they will be able to learn the patterns in the data and become really advanced. If you're able to collect a data set that is also comprised of a few dimensions, so you would have some descriptions, you would have the music, you would have the annotations, and you would also have the videos. So all of that is required to make sure that the AI is able to learn the patterns in that data
set. So the AI, so you would, to clarify that, so it's, when you talk about data, we're talking about the music itself, so the wave file or whatever, and it's actually one thing it's doing is identifying, I don't know, melodies, feeling, texture in music, but then it's, you're also talking about ancillary data like metadata, for example, track descriptions and BPM and things like that that might be supplied in the metadata, and then that's exactly combined.
Yeah.
As someone who's coming from the outside and someone who specializes in data, how good is the music industry at standardizing this kind of data and supplying good data?
So it's really difficult to verify that the data that you have on hand is good.
Yeah.
And we have a whole team dedicated to making sure that the data set that we are building are of great quality. And there is, even though there are some things that we can automate, there are still parts that require manual checking, but we do want to make the manual checking smaller. Yeah.
This is really important, isn't it? Because I guess for every platform, the quality of that data set is the secret sauce, right? So the Harmix secret sauce is making sure that is as good as possible. And these are massive data sets. What is an example of human intervention that you sometimes need to step in and check?
Yes, so for example, so to comment on the data that we've collected, is one part would be, so our data set consists of several key parts. One of them would be the contribution that we had from our mobile applications, which we released a few years ago, and we got about 30 to 40,000 users there, which were actively trying to select music for their content. Mm. And they generated a lot of interesting data, which is proprietary to Harmix. And they agreed to share this statistic.
And that's about that sort of data on how human beings go through the process of selecting music for something
that
they want.
Okay. Yes. So they did have an option to select the parameters of what track they are looking for, and then pick the right song for their video.
Right.
So, and then they could comment on how they liked it. They could give a rating. So that all of that was really useful to us. And this is one big part of the data set that we had. And the second part would be the curated data set that we invested in. Yeah. And that was another big thing for us. And of course, we relied on the non-copyrighted music, which we could use to just expose the algorithms to the body of music and make sure that it understands the different genre styles and is consistent and non-biased towards a certain type of music. Mm. That was also important for us. It's crucial for the company to make sure that the data set that we have is legal and ethical. Mm. And we want more companies in the industry to pay a lot of attention to it. So we want to lead by example, but also make sure that everyone on the market is also following that.
Well, let's talk a bit more about ethics. And you've mentioned that you have a very clear line that you've drawn that, you know, all the data you ingest should be done ethically in terms of ownership, respecting ownership of rights, and getting it from not just, I'm not saying other companies do this, but not just scraping the entire internet and, you know, saying, oh, it's mine now. There are companies out there who, not necessarily in music, but other AI companies who are providing services. And there's a lot of accusations that they have just ingested all of the data, right? And then say, oh, well, we didn't ask for permission, but we'll sort it out later. Why is your standpoint, do you think, more important that you start by respecting rights? Because, of course, this is a hot topic in the music industry. Artists want to have their rights respected and rights holders. So why is it so important to you?
Yeah, I think it all boils down to the individuals creating the music. So all of the music that we have right now is because people put the effort to create these amazing pieces and deliver them to us. So we should be at least thankful and grateful for their efforts. And coming from the standpoint that we need to adhere to all of the rights, it's making it obvious that we should make sure to negotiate with the right holders to get the licenses required. So if you're an artist that created some music and you don't want any AI to touch that, you should have the right to say that you don't want that to happen. Mm. And the AI companies need to respect that, because you're the creator of that music.
I presume that there are companies operating out there, whether it's in music or whatever, that are not operating ethically, and they've already taken this music on board. And if that person then subsequently says, actually, I didn't want you to do that, it's like, well, it's too late. It's in there now. And you know, the things we've learned from your piece of writing or piece of code or song or whatever is now, it's all mixed into the AI brain. And how do we take that out again? I mean, is that, you know, if let's say, for instance, this is just sort of to your point, if an artist subsequently says, no, I don't want you to use my music to train your AI, can an AI company go back and remove the learnings from that song, or is that not possible?
It's really hard. It's really hard. And I think we will be getting approaches to do that more efficiently, because currently there is no way to just take that track and just undo the learnings from that specific track. So, but it's possible to do the retraining, for example, and you can do the retraining on the data set that doesn't include the tracks that people decided to pull from you. So it's definitely something that you should be doing if you're getting these requests. But of course, as you said, not all of the companies prioritize these things. This is something that the government should probably incentivize to make sure that all of the companies are putting the right priorities and not just saying that, well, the revenue is the most important thing for us, and we will not care if all of the right holders are happy with what we're doing. Yeah. So this is where I think the government needs to step up and make sure to regulate these kind of activities.
Yeah.
In very similar way to, as for example, in GDPR, every person should have the right to request their data to be completely deleted from a system. And it's also not something that the company would probably want to do, but it's the right thing. If you don't want that data to be there, you can just say, I want to all of my data to be deleted. And this is a requirement for GDPR. So I think a similar thing should be also done in this case, but just not with just removing the data from the system, but also removing the data from the training.
From the training. Set. Yeah, we're on the cutting edge of that. It's interesting to see what will happen there, but that's a very clear comparison you've made there, and an understandable one. Let's go back to look into the future a little bit. You know, you've got people out there who are, you know, a lot of people using Harmix already as a tool. How do you see, in a sort of looking forwards, not just necessarily in the exact space Harmix is in, but how the sort of average person working in the music industry will do their job?
For music specialists, it's going to change how we're doing our daily jobs, but I think it's also important to understand that it's going to change in a good way. It's not that someone would be forcing some AI to just be definitely used. I think it's going to happen naturally when you see that some of the processes that you find to be rather tedious or boring, and you would be able to use some tool that will just replace that part of the job that you don't find interesting, and you can focus more on other parts that are more creative and that you enjoy doing more. I think it will also create new possibilities in terms of new jobs. So for example, prompt engineering, something that we've never had before, where people are trying to come up with the right prompts to make the AI do the job, is something that was never needed before, but now it has become a thing. Similar changes, I think, will happen in the future, and it's great to be witnessing that.
I think that's an interesting point, isn't it? That there is a lot of fear around the unknown, right? And that's understandable, but it is starting to sort of sound like the things that are going to change for us normal people immediately is taking away the pain points of repetitive work or boring work. And I for one, who is someone who answers reluctantly hundreds of emails every week, I can't wait for my email provider to provide an AI tool that helps me process my email. It's almost, they almost sound boring, but actually they're so fundamental, right? I mean, and I guess that, you know, that is, you get better results by doing, using a platform like yours, but also you're winning back time to do things that you find more meaningful and creatively useful.
Exactly. Even for this podcast, if you had a tool that would be able to do the edits quicker in the way that you want them to be done, you could record more podcasts and spend more time talking to more guests, and that could be a really productive thing.
Let's focus back on Harmix and search for music. So where do you see the AI development, let's say specifically yours, you know, going in this space? It sounds like you're retraining the model all the time to be better, right? So as you look forward, what sort of benefits do you see that having?
Something that we're really looking forward to do is constantly retraining the models to make sure that they stay up to date with the advancements that and with the state of the art research. So as I said, we get new approaches released very often, and it's important to keep up with that. Otherwise, the tech will become, from tomorrow's tech, we will get today's tech and then yesterday's tech. So we should definitely be looking for always delivering the tomorrow's tech in today's timeline.
How long does that training take, by the way? So if you say I'm gonna train the model on this new set of data with songs and metadata, how long does it take?
Well, it really depends. It's not just like one model that you would imagine doing all the job. It's really a complex set of architecture and different components that work together to deliver the service. And some components are really small and they might take minutes to be fine-tuned. But then some components are really large and they might take days. So it's really... and then some, of course, can take months, but we're not really currently doing the training at that scale. So it's also important to not to overthink some approaches, because sometimes a simpler architecture might actually yield better results than a very complex one that takes months to process, to do the training. So it's really a big set of different components working together.
What sort of future changes might there be that we haven't thought of yet? Everyone's fairly shocked by what AI can do in some ways, but what are the things we haven't thought about that could happen?
Yeah, I think a big thing for us is a feature that we have just recently released, which is combined search functionality, where you can not only specify a prompt, but also add video reference, add an audio reference, and then intertwine that into your prompt and say, I want the guitar from this track, and I want the vocals as in that second track that I attached here. And then I want the track to fit to my scene that I have over here. And then I want the lyrics to talk about this specific story. And all of that is actually part of the process when you're looking for music. You have all of these variables in your mind, and now you have the tools to express all of that. And it's something that we've been working for a while on, and we'll be improving to make sure that the multimodal approach, where you can actually specify all of these things in very little nuanced way, are actually working, and you get the maximum benefit from it.
In a slightly parallel field, AI mastering of music. You know, some music creation software now has a sort of, you know, a button you click, you say, right, I finished the track. This track is now going to get sent over to this AI mastering platform, and it's going to master it and come back, and I'll pick one of three of the best types. Do you know, your platform is an API. Do you see that in the future, maybe your technology will be plugged into let's say, the standard software that people are using in video editing, movie and TV creation, where it's like, okay, I've made this scene, I'll now pass it on to the AI to come up with some suggestions, and I'll move on to the next one.
Definitely. We are looking into ways of how to make the integrations be meaningful. So, for example, one of the things we've been doing is integration with CMS platforms, which we think is important because it gets the access to this API much more simply, and it's much more easier to do the setup. But also, as you mentioned, with the additional platforms, we're really open to the partnerships in that area and being able to propose that technology and package it in different ways.
Yeah. And I will put some links below the podcast to the various Harmix things you mentioned, the different prompt examples and things like that, and people can have a look for themselves. And I'll put an email address, so if anyone wants to reach out, they can reach out to you with any interesting ideas along those lines. Finally then, let's go back to talking about the music for the final question. If you could only pick one piece of music, and then you have to pick it, you can't train an AI to do this for you, right? You pick a piece of music, what would you pick as one piece of music to listen to?
To listen to for like forever. For the rest of my life?
Mm.
I think it needs to be something meaningful, something that would remind me of important questions. I think a track like that is I Lived by One Republic. It's talking right. about how important every second of your life is, and how precious, and how you need to respect that and be aware of that. And I think if that would be the track that I would need to listen to for the rest of my life, it would need to remind me of that, that every second is valuable, right. and I need to spend it meaningfully.
No, you've obviously thought about it. I appreciate that. So yes, I'll put a link to that below the podcast as well. And listeners can check that out as well. And maybe even use it as a prompt while they're trying out your platform. There you go. Okay, so Dimitra, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
And there we are. There are links below the podcast, as I mentioned. And if you found that interview useful, please share the podcast on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. If you want to get in touch with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at joe@musically.com. That's Joe, J-O-E, @musically.com. We also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis, news, marketing insight, skills, and weird links from across Musically's broad range of services. So sign up and impress your friends. Links are in the description, as always. That's it. Thanks for listening. I've been Joe Sparrow. You've been you. And until next time, farewell.